There is something that we don't like to talk about much in the Heinz family. We like to keep it secret. We have a puppy. I know I don't talk about it much. Her name is Hala. She's about 8 months now, and she is like most puppies. She has given me a gift in that she is taking me on walks. She has a lot of energy and a spirit of exploration and adventure that just won't abide staying cooped up in the house. So we have to go on walks daily. A little while ago, Derek brought his Kiva by, and they took a stroll together, and they got to work each other out rather than having we run them. But there is nothing quite like the pure joy of a puppy chasing a frisbee and bringing it back to you proudly and dropping it at your feet. There's nothing quite like the joy of trying to carry a dead branch that is four times her length, or sniffing all those wonderful sniffs. Actually, I could probably do without the sniffing part, but on the other hand, she's hard to be around if you want to relax and she hasn't yet had her walk. When we go up when we walk. We follow the street, turn some corners, and then when the houses end, we are on an open hillside that ascends to the fence, I guess it's in this direction, that ascends up to the fence of the Bonneville Shoreline Trail. We live in Providence, up the hill there. And we climb a little with stops for Hala to chase the frisbee a little bit until you get to a gate at the top of the hill. And the gate is placed in the fence, and the gate gives us admittance to the Bonneville Trail. Usually we go through it to explore where it will take us. The gate is always open. In fact, the actual gate part has been removed and is leaning against the fence about 10 feet away. The gate is really just a wide open gap in the fence. It's an open invitation for those who have made the climb to go on through. It doesn't keep anyone out. Is this the kind of gate that you picture when Jesus says, "Go in through the narrow gate"? When I hear Jesus say that the gate that leads to life is narrow and the road is difficult, I don't think of a wide open gap with the gate removed. When I think of the narrow gate, I think of having to suck in my gut and having to squeeze through. I look down and I see that I'm not that skinny kid anymore. I'm getting to be a little more pear-shaped as I get older. Don't even think about saving your buttons if you have them on your shirt. You have to squeeze through. When I recall Jesus' challenge a few verses earlier to be divinely perfect and to have a righteousness that exceeds that of the righteousness experts, I feel that narrow gate crushing the breath out of me as I try to squeeze through. The joy of the walk is gone. I've lost the frisbee along the way. Others seem to make it through fine, but I don't feel invited. I feel squashed. Have you ever felt the pressure on your chest too? The pressure of faith, of expectations, the pressure from life, from the pressure to be good, the pressure to do right or to look just so. I end up tempted to take easier paths, ones that look more tasty and tempting and free. They don't promise a long-lasting life, but they offer a pretty fun day or two. Jesus encourages us to take the narrow gate, but when it takes my breath away, I think, I don't know, Jesus. Why do you have to make the gate so narrow? Why do you have to crush us to bring us to salvation? Don't you know how good those apple fritters are? As I was wrestling once more to get through the narrow gate of this text, something in me said, I didn't make the gate so narrow. You did. The text changed for me when I heard that. I may be completely off base. I may be totally wrong, okay? But I am ever more convinced, the more I think about it, that it isn't God who makes the gate narrow. We think about the gate as something that God has put in place to keep us out until we are skinny enough to get through. When we look like the models in the magazines, we will be able to make it, we think. So we go on diets and we torture ourselves. But until then, we are crushed. Thanks, Jesus. But God isn't the one who idolizes the airbrushed models in the magazines. We do. As much as God defines the gate by righteousness, we define the gate by our brokenness. It is our own feelings of guilt and our own unwillingness to change and to trust and to love and to share and to give up trying to control everything. This is what makes the gate so narrow, as individuals and as communities. You know what makes the gate so narrow? We think we have to make it through the gate in order to attain eternal salvation when we die someday. We think we have to believe a certain thing or achieve a certain benchmark of behavior or wear a particular hairstyle or perform a prescribed ritual. Then we will have salvation. Then God will love us. Except that's earning salvation. That is salvation by magic formula or secret sauce. In religious language, that's works righteousness. Earlier in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus has already told us not to worry about tomorrow. Focus on today. Place your tomorrow in God's hands. You don't have to be perfect to make it to eternal salvation. I will take care of your tomorrow on the cross, Jesus says. I want to help you today. If you go for a walk through the gate today, you will discover the fullness of life today, a life of trust and love and community. Jesus doesn't want us to live righteous lives so that we can punch a ticket through the gate. He doesn't want us to run a maze so that we can get rewarded with a piece of cheese at the end of our life. Jesus invites us to be righteous because a blessed life comes from being righteous. We discover the fullness of life when we find the peace of being in right relationship with God. And at peace with ourselves and in right relationship with our neighbors. On the cross, Jesus hasn't only made the gate open to eternal salvation, he's ripped the gate off and put it to the side. Jesus wants us to stroll through not someday, but today. God empowers us to do so. It is hard. It feels narrow, but not because of God, but because it sets us apart from the world. It sets us at odds with the powers that be. When Jesus talks about pursuing righteousness in the Beatitudes, the difficulty doesn't come from God. It comes from the world responding with hostility towards you when you work for justice and peace. It makes us stand out from the wider community. It makes us uncomfortable when we sit down with our friends and with our bank accounts and when we vote to further justice rather than our own personal interests. It's hard when the pressures of life crush the breath out of us. It's hard and it feels narrow because it puts in stark relief the difference that Jesus makes. Love and redeeming sacrifice and community on the one hand, and fear and consumption and hoarding and self-preservation and self-centeredness on the other. Jesus says, all I have to do is choose. Go through the gate. I've ripped it off for you. In the ancient world, conquering emperors would march conquered peoples and armies through the gates to the city when they would move them. And on the gates to the city, they would put symbols of gods, their gods, and symbols of the emperor. And when you walk through the gates, you were reminded, okay, this is who is in charge now. Our gate has a cross on it. The kingdom of heaven, Jesus said, has drawn near. There's a new sheriff in town. He's put away his gun. We just haven't grasped it yet. It's hard. But not because God makes it hard. It's because we make it hard. For ourselves and for each other. I don't know how many people have come to me over the course of my ministry, come to me for a private conversation, and they ask me, as a pastor, they ask me, Paul, can God really forgive me for something that I've done? Really? I feel like there's no way that God can love me. I can barely share it with you. Sometimes they even can't. They just need to know, God, can God really love me for who I am? And I don't share that I feel that way too sometimes. But we come to this service of worship and we wrestle with our own confession, our own moments of honesty. And then we get this little thing called the assurance of pardon. We might breeze through it without even thinking about it. But oh, how powerful that moment is in every service of worship. When God says, I have forgiven you, it's done. I don't see your darkness. I don't see your brokenness. I don't see your failures. I just see you as I created you to be, beautiful child of God. The cross already had someone on it. It was my son. You are free. Be not afraid, sang the choir. Step through the gate. It's wide open for you. Don't make it so narrow. The hardest thing is for us to forgive ourselves and each other. God knows only grace. It is we who struggle with judgment. On the cross, God's love sets us free. We just have to walk through our own gates. And God gives us that strength and that grace. And God gives us each other to help us when we get stuck. Let's go, Jesus says. I know it's hard, but it's time to escape. Before we move on, I didn't do this in the first service, but I have to say something about Jesus' warning against the false prophets. There are certainly plenty of them. It's just that much of the time we can't agree on who they are. I know that I have been cast in the role of the wolf more than once when I have questioned authority or when I've moved away from traditional interpretations of Scripture, when we as a church take a stand that is at odds with the community around us, we are cast in the role of wolves. But on the other side of the coin, there is another side of the coin. I know that I see wolves all around too, in a culture of consumption and exclusion and injustice. I have my own view of who the wolves are. But Jesus doesn't name names here. He says to the disciples, you look and decide. Look at their fruit. You will be able to know. Jesus gives you the tools and the freedom to decide. The preacher doesn't tell you. The church doesn't tell you. You look at the fruit and decide. Be free. We have a yard, backyard, and when Timber was still around a couple years ago, we put a gate around because he would like to wander. And it was just a plastic gate, and on the back of our yard there is a big stone wall. We live on a hillside, so they put a big stone wall there. And Timber, who was getting old, and he was, you know, wider, so he didn't realize, or he wasn't smart enough, or didn't have the strength in his rear section anymore to hop up the stone wall, or to figure out that there was a little gap between the gate and the rocks. And so we put the gate up, and the gate, we have two gates in there and the fence all the way around, and that was enough. The gates are always closed. Well, it's a little different with Hala. Because Hala's about half as wide, and she's a puppy. So she very quickly discovered that there is just this little hole there between the gate and the rocks. And she has also learned that she can very quickly and very easily hop up the rocks and get out and explore the great new world. And there are two dogs of our neighbor on the uphill, and they are calling to her, Hala, come and play with us. We can't get out, but you can. And so we let Hala out, and out of habit, we forget, and all of a sudden, Carrie and I look at each other, oh my gosh, how long has the dog been out? She escapes. And there is good news, not for the Hines family and the dog, but for us in here this morning when we close and lock our gates, when we build fences around our yards, and we limit ourselves to our little plots of land. We become happy, but Jesus is on top of the rock wall, and he's saying in this season of Lent and Good Friday and Easter, he says it's time to escape. To discover a bright, wide world of love and mercy and community. Amen.